Hello, this is Halcyon. I'm starting a new series of conversations with people that are brilliant, amazing, and inspiring. They will be in addition to the weekly Hug Nation broadcasts. And this one is with Zachary Winchester from Detroit, the nonsense man, inspiring burner, and all-around creative light. Hope you enjoy.
Hello, everyone. How are you? We're going to be talking about how you are, about how we are.
A little foreshadowing.
Yes. How are we?
I am Halcyon here with Zachary. Is it Zachary or just Zach now?
I find Zachary to be endearing. So yeah, I like Zachary.
As it came out of my mouth, I felt closer to you. So yes, Zachary. Last time we got online, we just let whatever came to mind come to mind. And as always happens, it led to dolphin sex. So this time we're going to start with a little bit more direction. And can you share the topic that we were discussing?
Well, I have a question for myself, and I won't get all metaphysical and say, and you are myselves, and I'm staring in the mirror. However, that may be your reality tunnel as well. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more. But I have a question for everyone and myself, and that is, in terms of mental health and expressions, like how we're feeling and how we act on it, what would be the normal way to act in what we all seem to agree is crazy times? And I feel like we need to have a group meeting about what is the new working definition of sanity.
I think I'm frozen. I see you frozen. But I think what you're saying is what is normal? What is the definition of normal in the modern world, where clearly our baseline of what is crazy or what is hard to comprehend as being acceptable? Whoops. How does the definition of normal change in a world that is so clearly not normal? Or is it? I guess that's part of the question too, is like, because I think one thing that came up is it feels like so many people are in a state of either massive or subtle mental illness right now. The number of people who are depressed or anxious or attention deficit or suicidal, these are baseline feelings for so many people who are trying to make it in this modern world. And the question is, have we always been this crazy? And we're now just being more open and upfront about it? Or is the world shifting in a way that trying to pretend that the way we live in this world is acceptable and does not drive us mad? I keep trying to add you. Let's see. Keep saying add, send an invite, inviting. And you know, there's that idea of in an insane world, it is only the insane people who are sane, or something like that. And you can correct me, but you know, one of the things that I've been thinking a lot about lately is that in the modern world, we have, there's so much of our culture is dependent on marketing and media, and there's so much of people's energy goes into being consumers of products and services as well as media, and both of these massive industries that our whole economy runs on requires everybody to be in a constant consumer state. And so the massive brainwashing requirement in our system is that of not enoughness. And so Maslow's hierarchy of needs, free from marketing, you would get to a certain state where you would get your roof over your head, and you would get your food, and you would get your relationships. And you would start to get to the state where like, wow, I'm safe. I have all my needs met. I can start to really work on my peace of mind. I can start to work on being a better person, work on my relationships and my loves and my self-actualization and my purpose. But in a marketing-based system, Maslow's hierarchy of needs is constantly thrown back down the ladder as new needs are introduced. New needs are introduced. And so there's this kind of chronic stress, this chronic not enoughness, this chronic never reaching your purpose. And so when you have years, decades, lifetimes of failing because the system requires you to be constantly in a state of failure, I don't know, how do you not fall into a state of depression or anxiety or drugs and alcohol or something to divert you from this identity of not enoughness?
That makes me think of something that I always think of. I don't know where I first heard it, but it was that there are real problems and there are imaginary problems. And if you have a real problem, you need a real solution. And if you have an imaginary problem, you need an imaginary solution. So, example of a real problem, burning truck in the middle of the bridge. I need to get across the bridge in this vehicle. There is no way to use magic or spirituality sort of things that I know of, unless you can like force lift the truck off the thing. But you need to confront that with a real solution. Whereas, say, a problem like I feel sad, that problem isn't going to be solved with a real physical solution, usually, of just like, you know, the consumerist thing, get an object, this is now mine, and now I am happy sort of thing. You need to go in and confront that in the arena of your mind, heart, soul, whatever. And so whenever I'm seeing myself as in a state of problem, I like to ask that. And I think the answer to your question then is the answer, the cure to chronic depression, or the treatment, is to find yourself in a state where you are being chased by a real saber-toothed tiger. And we don't have that so much anymore. So now we've got all these imaginary problems, and not to downplay them as less because they're imaginary, but they're thought and feeling problems. Whereas before, when we didn't have time to contemplate ourselves because we were always looking for food or to get away from the claws or the spears, there wasn't time to have an existential crisis or depression. There was just, well, do you have food? Are you currently on fire? You know, and now it's become more complicated and less, in a way. Because, you know, being chased by a predatory cat is a complication. You know?
Well, and that's been very visible to me twice in the last 24 hours. I was over lunch today. I was talking with somebody. He was talking about how enraged he keeps getting over political things. You know, over the state of this new Trump world, but then we kept coming back to that distinction between a imaginary problem and a real problem. Like, how much of this perception of suffering that he was experiencing was based on real problems versus imaginary ones. If he breaks it down to his experience hour by hour, day by day, he actually had no evidence of any real problems. They were all ideas of things that potentially could be suffering or injustices or things like that. And I think that can all go into that category of an imaginary problem. There's like, worrying that there's a lot of saber-toothed tigers out there is different than running from a saber-toothed tiger. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's actually, your distinction is actually what I think is going to help me a lot, because I keep slipping into this of kind of feeling obligated to be unhappy because of the degree of imaginary problems that I feel responsible for addressing. But if I actually slow down and be like, how much of my life, how many saber-toothed tigers are there? And should I spend any time that could be spent hugging a loved one worrying about the saber-toothed tiger population, which is actually an imaginary problem? Like, how much, like, should I divert any attention to these imaginaries and that distinction, I think, is going to be helpful for me. So thank you.
Yeah, you spend that time petting a cat. Just, I had to sneak that in. The saber-tooth tiger meditation has become the love your cat meditation in this age.
And so the other thing that I was, there's been these fires in California, and it's been a fascinating time in history to be witnessing those, because you see people, you know, doing these live broadcasts as they're evacuating, for example, and people doing these live calls for help and neighbors helping each other. And there's a guy that I know in Ojai, Mickey Willis, and who really has spent effort trying to publicly share his process of starting a family and raising kids and being in integrity and starting a business. And so he was sharing his experiences as he was driving up to see if his house was still there, and his house burned down. And then he shared his experience of telling his kids that their house was burned down, but then making the distinction between what a home is and what a house is, which I thought was this beautiful teaching opportunity. And then yesterday he was driving from an evacuation point, and he did this really, I think, profound check-in where he was talking exactly about this idea of, like, these moments. It's rare in the modern world when you have actual saber-toothed tigers, but in this situation, during these fires, neighbors came together. People ran into the smoke to save cats. You know, like people like showed up as really impressive, powerful, value-driven people when they were forced to deal with real problems. And he was like, mm-hmm. like as much as frustrating as this world and all the imaginary stuff is, having the blessing of all this tragedy was getting to see people show up in this awesome way.
I feel the blessing of tragedy thing. I've found myself when I'm racked with imaginary problems, sometimes the very thing, like the shovel that comes and scoops me out of a depression rut, will be something actually bad happening in my life. Because I seem to have this reaction, this reflex, that when there's something actually going on that is a real problem, that I kind of switch into the one who's going to seem steadfast during that. But really, I experience it emotionally that there's been times where a real crisis got me out of an imaginary funk. And that's the thing that I'm both hopeful for. I'm more hopeful than I am anxious of it. Well, I feel different about things depending on what current mood I'm in. What my DXM, my list of mental disorders and situations is Winnie the Pooh, the characters from Winnie the Pooh. Each one of them represents a different mental disorder or just state of being. So if I'm in rabbit mode, I'm going to be anxious about everything, and the world is falling apart. If I'm in piglet mode, oh wait, no, piglet's anxiety. Rabbit is OCD. So if I'm in rabbit mode, I'm just neurotic about everything needs to be fixed. I need to fix everything. I need to set this right. This isn't perfect. Piglet mode, I'm freaking out about everything. Owl mode, I think I know everything and I feel super wise, but I'm switching everything around. And that's like what the whole nonsense man persona is that, like, you're kind of always wrong whenever you're speaking as a human being, I found. Or there's, you don't know the whole story, so, but it would be tedious to be meta about everything. Anyway, Pooh Bear is an addict, by the way. I always find that funny. He's addicted to the honey, and he's willing to do anything to get it. Anyway, they all represent a disorder. So, but in my, what I feel is my sane state of mind, when I look at the world and I look at how we feel now, a lot of us feel and think that we've got a real problem with some of the things that are going on out away from us that are actually beginning to have effects. Like, politics is really beginning to have effect on a lot of people that is visible, it registers to them. But still, like you said, there's a lot of times where the level of gloom that some folks feel, or the fear that they feel, or the anxiety, the derangement about this situation, it's not clouding their real life that much to really warrant that. And the thing is that you could what I found is like you gotta to actually fight this fire. You can't just spill more napalm on there. You have to actually have to do the opposite of what we think is wrong. You know, and that's I'm figuring out more and more about how I can do that every day. But so it seems like some real chaos might unfold in our lifetimes, right? A lot of people are saying that, like some real problems might be on their way, where it's not just something that's going on in Washington or something that will be decreed that will affect your taxes or that will it could actually descend into problematic human scenarios. And I wonder, I feel confident about it sometimes and others scared, but I wonder how all of us will react in that way. I don't know how I will be. I think that it's important. Well, for me, it's important for intellectual humility to realize that I don't know how I behave when things really get, you know, more chaotic than they have for me before. I don't know how I respond to that. I'd like to think that I pull it together and that this hero emerges from all of us. But I think for some of us, you find out that, like, who was all talk, or you find out who has this capacity to, you know, perhaps be the one who can do what's necessary, regardless of the squeamish nature of it. I mean, I don't know. And I don't know what the situation may or may not be. And I don't feel like you're crazy for having considerations like that right now, but that's the real question, is like, what is a normal thought pattern right now? Because I don't think that anybody's crazy for, mildly freaking out. But also when I see someone who's just totally steadfast about all of this, and they're just totally, they're not even giving it any deference as right now being a particular situation, then that seems a little spooky to me, right? You know, like there is some sort of a crescendo of chaos and complexity going on in the waking reality right now, I observe. Should we be freaking out about it in every moment? I don't know. Is that warranted yet? I don't know. I don't.
Yeah, I think that there's also I was noticing as we were talking about imaginary versus real that isn't to discount the importance or significance of imaginary issues. I think one of the reasons there's a real warrior's path in dealing with these imaginary issues, the courage that it requires to deal with shame, you know, like that's not a real problem, but that is a significant thing. And I think that it's part of that is the training that potentially kicks in when the shit hits the fan. You know, like I think like I eventually got way too squeamish to watch it, but I enjoyed the beginning of Walking Dead as these people, like, you know, regular people were thrown into this, you know, a circumstance where they have to step up and deal with a apocalyptic world. And I like that the human story of I think what you're talking about of like, okay, so I'm a school teacher, but who am I when the world requires me to be heroic? I'm super brave and eloquent and big-hearted sitting behind my webcam, but you know, when there's a crowd of starving people in the streets, am I going to assume the same role of being a leader? You know, I like to tell myself that story, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. And I wonder, is there room for depression in total chaos? Because there's some of the statistics that I've heard of like, you know, like really intense depression and suicide is more prevalent amongst those who do have a little more of their hierarchy of needs met. It's not so much a problem when you're worrying about food. And that makes me wonder, because there's with depression, I think there's two important things, like distinctions. There's two very different ways this unfolds. And I don't know what separates it for myself. Like, I feel like we've all at some point asked, like, do I have like chronic neurochemical like depression problems where it's difficult for me to enjoy a sunset? Or am I just feeling the very normal waves of the sads? Which I think we've all agreed it's okay to be sad. And that's a cliche for a reason. It really seems to be true. It seems to be like the treatment, the cure for a lot of my depression is just to be sad for a bit and then it passes. And it's the fighting it or seeing it as wrong that is problematic. But there is also a thing that is like neurochemical depressive brain chemistry. And I've definitely talked to folks before where I completely green light they're seeking psychiatric technology for that. Because if you're consistently just not, it doesn't seem like you have the capacity to appreciate life. I don't think that's a problem with life. I think that there might be something with wiring, but I don't know myself. And I wonder sometimes what would be a normal amount of depressive hours for me to experience in a given month or year. How much of it is because it's wintertime now? How much of it is because maybe my life actually sucks? I don't think it does, but you know, sometimes it's like, there are some things that warrant sadness, and it would be weird not to feel for them at all, right? So that's a question that I really have for myself and just reality right now. I don't know. I don't know when I'm starting to get close to the line of abnormality regarding anxiety or depression or some of the other Pooh Bear characters that I don't have as much. But for me, those are or like mania, for example, which is Tigger. Yeah, that used to be my main mode was Tigger mode all the time, and I was annoying as hell to a lot of people, and I both learned like to dial that back publicly sometimes and to just let it rip when it's appropriate, but also I don't feel it as constantly as much anymore. But sometimes I feel super manic. I feel like we got to get all our living in like today, and how much of that is normal now, And I don't know. Perhaps this whole normal, weird, binary spectrum thing, perhaps it's just not a thing. Or perhaps it really is, and we need to figure this out immediately. I don't know.
I think a lot of the... I think you touched a little bit about, you know, depression, anxiety. A lot of ways, these are the luxuries of affluence and abundance. You know, like, to have the time to be bored, to have the, like, if I'm running from a bear, I'm not feeling like I'm not living my life purpose. I just don't have the luxury of that. I remember reading a study once that said that people who are financially abundant, like rich people who suffer depression, tend to have more profound bouts of depression because they no longer have the story in their head that once I get some money, everything's gonna be fine. Mm. And I think that,
yeah,
you know, that can be something that in our culture, as we have so many of our needs met, if we're still not happy, you know, well, what's going to make me happy? And that can be a real darkness. So I don't know. I think that I know that today I was. Or last night I was struggling a little bit with a lot of imaginary problems and then saw a friend post online that today was their birthday and they were feeling alone. And so I suddenly made my top priority to take them to lunch. And it was like, and for me, I went from feeling this kind of angsty, I don't know, am I using my time good? Am I being productive? Am I doing it to like, oh, black and white, kindness, help being loving to another human being, like simple. And so that's maybe another way of making the anxiety. It doesn't have to be in raw survival, but in more of the that's another realm of the a real. I think love and support and being there for others. Maybe that's the gray area of the it's real and it's imaginary.
Hmm. Well, there's a difference that I find in my head, heart, soul, whatever, being intellectually upset or sad about something and viscerally feeling it. And that's with kindness or acts of goodness. If I feel like I'm on a roll of showing up and being of assistance here, then I at least have the intellectual trophy or whatever. I have the thought that I'm in good standing, you know, and that can help sometimes tip the scales of the visceral feeling. But sometimes my emotions don't line up with reality, and it. On the thought of that depression and anxiety is a symptom of abundance or a luxury of abundance, and folks who like get really wealthy and they used to think that their problem was not having money, I experienced that in just spot on with romantic sexuality. There was a time like in my 20s where I just was not connecting at all. And there were several years, like from birthday to birthday, where I didn't even kiss someone. Well, two. There was two where I just didn't even kiss anyone. And it was not because of a vow of celibacy. I was not trying to be a monk or a Jedi. I was just incapable I don't know what, I mean, there was a bunch of things going on, but one of the big things was that I was racked with the desire to interact in that way. And I was probably sweating it. It was probably so apparent, and it made me worthless in a lot of ways, just in a lot of aspects of my life. How much I was thinking about loneliness or celibacy or the why nots or the what is wrong with me. And then over the course of the last few years and of recently, like that, I'm doing well in that department, and it there seems to be an abundance, and the new problem is like choices and how to behave and how to and you know the other things that come with that. But I can no longer make the argument in my head that it's because I'm lonely or that it's because of some biological underpinning thing of like, you know, perhaps the whole I used to have this thought pattern that was like, you know, the whole purpose for a biological organism to exist is to reproduce, and you're not reproducing, therefore your whole biology is turning against you, shutting down. And there was so much negative thought about that. And now that that's not a problem in my life anymore, I did go through a thing of like, whoa, I solved that, and I'm not feeling as on top of the world as I thought I would be, because that was the only problem in my life. And very quickly it got replaced now with, I would say my lack thought in my life is that I would like just more opportunities to do stuff like this, and not just more frequently, but more reach, more just, I would like to be made use of. And after Burning Man this year, it really, really hit me, because I made such good use of myself at Burning Man this year that afterward, after 7 days of knowing where I had to be and that I would be put to good use, after that, coming home and having so few opportunities, or so much fewer, where it's like all you got to do is get yourself to this place where the work that only you can do is waiting for you, and you will go to sleep tired every night because you really exhausted your energy. Like I desire that now, but I think again that once I get that, once I situate myself in that situation, then I'll just be just God of bliss and that nothing. But you know that at every new peak, flattens into a plateau.
Exactly.
And you know.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, so I think that is the crux to so much of normalcy and peace of mind, is that story of this is the problem I'm having, and when I fix that, I'll be better. You know, mm-hmm. whether that is money, whether that is prestige, whether that is, you know, health or body or friend, I mean, romance, like, eventually, whether we accept it or not, we learn that that's just not true. The baseline changes no matter what. And so the objective to life can never, you will never win the game by reaching the end of the task. You will only win the game when you realize I'm supposed to enjoy the task. You know, like And if you, because there is, I had a huge moment in my life when I was frustrated by not having more reach. You know, I was like, I'm putting all this effort in, and I saw other people doing better than me that I thought were my peers, and I was just so frustrated that I was, you know, not being put to use in this world that, like, in the, to the degree that I should. And somebody pointed out that that mentality I had was blinding me to the good that I was doing, and it was blinding me to the impact that I was having on a small number of people, and that as they were talking to me, I realized I'm stuck in the same trap that every rock star gets trapped in, is that once you start to go, oh cool, there's 10 people dancing to my music, you're like, I should be playing to a room of 100. And then you play to 100, you're like, I should be playing to a room of 1,000. And you never really realize, dude, people are listening to your music and dancing, then win. It's a win.
Yeah.
And then you're just of service. You show up and you're of service, and you let the marketing of your talents fall into, I mean, this is what it says to be a spiritual thing for me. Like, okay, at some point, I need to recognize that whatever the cosmic plan is more, has more wisdom than my ego desire to play a big role in the unfolding of the universe. And so if I can focus more on being as authentic as possible, then I can have faith that I will get the reach that I want. And there's parts of the, I say this blah 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 as if I know this to be true. I say this as this is my continual journey, because on one hand, I consider the fact that we are having this dialogue to be an absolute win. Like, I look, I go, oh, there's 13 people here? That's it? Oh, come on. Why do we have more viewers? Like, oh, dude, that's exactly what we're talking about. Like, I'm caught in this moment in that dichotomy of victory, because I know I'm in integrity being who we're supposed to be in the world. Mm-hmm. At the exact same time, being critical that it's not having the egoic impact in terms of degrees and size that my old cultural bigger, better, more mind is telling me that it should. So I guess what I'm saying is
the desire does not help, I think.
I give up. No.
Yeah, that's it. That's Alan Watts say it's like the perfect place to operate from is to find yourself in a genuine state of what you could call I don't care. And I've definitely found that that is the case. Like, desire does not light a fire under me to do better. It lights a fire, but it's painful and less enjoyable. I have an excellent working metaphor in my life that I do not pray at this altar enough. I will probably go outside and do this immediately. And that is, there is a cat that frequents the building that I live at, and her name is Mama Kitty. And you cannot seek petses from Mama Kitty. You don't get to decide when she is available to be approached. You do not approach. The only thing that you can do is get within her proximity and make yourself available. And I found this thing that I can actually, like, meditate myself into a state of, like, I have to actually not have the desire for her to come over and allow me to pet her. She just has to do so because I am just open. And it really helps me to, like, try to differentiate the difference between desire and available and open, you know? And that's the thing.
That's huge. And I think that covers everything we're talking about. And maybe we can wrap up a little bit with this concept, because, like, when you were talking about your desire to have a partner, and how repelling that is to people. You know, like, nobody, well, maybe not repelling, but, like, people.
Well, I thought my problem word was partner. It wasn't.
Well, I guess
it is like, repelling.
When you need something, nobody wants to give it to you. And it's true with that cat. You know, if I need its attention, it doesn't want anything to do with you. If you need people to give you approval for your art, then it's like, it's coming from, you know, when you need romantic attention, it's like it's like it repels the things that you. But when you, someone gave me the advice, he said, to find your soulmate, figure out what it is you're looking for, write it on a piece of paper, and then put that paper in a desk and forget about it and make yourself happy, because people want to be around happy people. Employers want to be around people who are content. Everybody, everything that you're seeking is attracted to somebody that is already at peace and not looking for that thing. And so, yeah, I don't know. I feel like that is so hard, though, like, especially when someone is telling you all the things that they're wishing was different in their life, and you go, oh, well, if you want all those things, just stop wanting them. Like,
yeah.
Or it's the same, like, the old, you know, Zen Buddhist teachings. You know, like, if you are seeking peace, if you're seeking lack of suffering, well, then, or lack, if you're seeking lack of desire, well, then you're desiring, and you can't get to peace by trying to get to peace. You have to.
There's not like a muscle reflex for that. Like, stop wanting. Ugh, I just like tighten my glutes and I'll stop wanting. I have that going on in my life right now, really, really intensely. And my thought of it is, or the way I see it working is this, dare I say, like, shamanic curriculum or like karmic syllabus. The way this seems to happen for me is I spend a good amount of time in a lot of situations suffering only because of my desire, and you gotta let experience that fucking your life up for this amount of time, and then after I've felt enough of that from wanting and desiring, then there's that moment of, oh, all right, you know what? I give up. I don't care. I'm going to pay attention to the things that are right here available, and I am going to actually live my life on what's here right now. And then the sincere thing happens where it's like, this is amazing. This is wonderful. This is, in terms of reach, there are things that I can do and say and interactions that I can have now on a level of intimacy that I wouldn't be able to if I got to a certain stage, or at least not. There'd be worries. There'd be reasons not to. I mean, I can flat out post on social network to say, who wants to get dinner? And that I'm at a point now where that is completely sane, and usually it results in tacos. There's a place where you can't, you know, just do that, and just so many things like that. So I don't know what I got to be doing to like lessen that, the want, the desire, but I know I'm thoroughly convinced that my desires are not engines. They are not boosters. What I need, what I find works is you got to have an unwinnable mission. You have to have something that doesn't have an endpoint. You got to have that endless stack. So if you have a mission that is like, you know, spreading happiness or lessening suffering, that's a high stack of papers. You know, you're not going to get through that assignment tonight or in your possibly 88 to 146 year lifetime. So that is a good one to have, something like that, because If you have an objective, if you have a mission that is obtainable, I definitely have experienced like the lowest you will feel is once you've obtained that thing, and you can no longer use it as the reason for why you don't feel like there's enough honey in your pot,
right?
To use the Pooh Bear.
Well, and I think that
you have to be addicted to seeking honey.
Yes, but and the thing is, though, you can the part of that too is. Even if you never fill your honey pot, you can feel a victory with every time you get a spoonful, or even though you're not going to end hunger, you can feel a victory every time you share a sandwich. And I think the trick is not being depressed that you never win the big battle, but instead focus on the victory in every little battle. So that you're right, you're never going to win the war, so you always have something to go for, but not letting that be a failure over and over and over again, so that you can and if you can figure out a way to do that where every step becomes then you enjoy the process, then you enjoy the race, and I mean, it sounds trite as I say it, but yeah, the journey. But yeah, the journey.
Yeah. So the my hypothesis would be right now of that normalcy, or maybe we just throw out the whole idea of normal. Where I would like to be in terms of my emotional, but not just any given moment, but overall, I'd like to find myself somewhere fluctuating in the middle. With every now and then, it's good to have some extreme pendulum swings. I don't want to be rid of my depression or anxiety, or certainly not my mania, because I get super awesome sometimes when I'm in Tigger mode, or I just really enjoy life when I'm there. And this yields answers, and this sometimes makes me, you know, make a smart choice with anxiety. But anyway, I just want to find that middle ground and teeter and swing, but not spend so much time here or so much time here that I don't think that it's sane or normal, and I don't want it for myself to feel like just zenfully content all the time, or like furiously contempt all the time. I want to be involved in the stuff that's happening in reality, and yes, it seems kind of crazy out here, but we're here, and it's when actually sincerely engaged in reality, I keep finding more honey. It's there. There seems to be a geyser of it that is infinite. So I would like to find a way to just to economize the Dunkaroo frosting, the Sargento cracker cheese, you know, to have a little bit of honey every day, and not be looking to just to guzzle the infinite jar of honey that lives at the top of that seemingly unobtainable tree, guarded by all the angriest wasps in reality at the top of the peak that becomes a plateau. It's just, you just enjoy your life, hashtag live your life sort of thing at the end of the day, I think is what's normal. Just
that. Bravo. I can't think of a better sentiment to close on than quest for honey, not full guzzle. And maybe we continue this quest for what is normal as we continue these conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, thank you so much, Zach. It's the treat. We will keep doing these. Stay online. We will post when our next one is.
Thank you so much. And thank you all. This has been magical.